Today on The Grave Talks, part two of Investigating the Mount, the home of writer Edith Wharton, a conversation with Crypto Paranormal Investigations. Miranda, when you've been doing any investigations, not necessarily even the Mount, have you ever come across something like that? Something that you were like, I can't quite explain that?
Ironically, this is the last investigation that we had at the Mount. I don't even remember if we were breaking down or something at that point.
Baselines, oh, no, I think.
Starting. We were just, it was just the beginning of the night. What am I even talking about?
Yeah, baselines.
So we were just about to do some baselines, and Nick was off in a different room, but I knew where he was. He was a little bit in front of me off to the left. And I was walking down this hall, and I, you know, thought I heard a woman's voice like talking. So I stopped and I tried to listen. I was like, did one of the cleaners come up and was like talking to Nick? And I was like, okay. Like, so I didn't really pay too much mind to it, but you know, I walked over to like go and, you know, see who Nick was talking to, and Nick wasn't talking to anybody. And so we, you know, checked out the area. We then went outside. The cleaners were there outside, but you know, we ran out and Nick went to go talk to them, and they had said that they hadn't come inside yet. And I think we kind of freaked them out a little bit. But you know, it's always some type of little cliffhanger like that. Like I'm sure that I heard it. I know that that's what I heard. I didn't hear like anything like clear. It just sounded like a woman's voice talking to somebody else. But it's one of those things that it kind of screws with your mind a little bit. Like each time I've had like an experience, it's always like, well, what if I, you know, like, what was that? What, if, you know, cause there's also, something called a psychological effect called matrixing. And, you know, Nick and I have been on investigations where we're like, you know, we're pulling all nighters. It's like the crack of dawn and you get a little delirious and it's like, okay, well, am I actually hearing something that's here? Or am I manifesting something?
Right.
Because we were hearing birds chirping. And when we'd listen in really carefully, it sounded like talking, like a TV talking. And then we'd listen even more carefully. And then it would sound like birds
New
chirping.
New Boston Inn. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. It was the weirdest phenomenon ever. It kept like sort of switching back and forth. So it really, you know, it sticks with you when you have experiences like that because you can't really explain it and you don't have any proof of it, but you know it happened.
And I think it's interesting that you both heard women talking.
Yeah. Numerous places I feel like we've heard that. Because there's Hillview? We heard women talking or a woman talking. And I heard it coming from downstairs. He heard it coming from upstairs. And we met each other in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the tobacco smoke, the cigarette smoke is, excuse me, very common. I've smelt that a lot. I worked at a place where there was a couple people who died there who smoked all the time. And just you'd be engulfed in cigarette smoke. And if you don't smoke, it's very strong.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from. Can't smoke in the building. But I just walked through what felt like a cloud of cigarette smoke. But you don't see it, but you definitely smell it. And I think
that's this was very clear. You know, I knew exactly what I was smelling. It took me sort of a second to realize that I was smelling tobacco smoke because obviously nobody's allowed to smoke actually on our property, especially not in the house. And I got this musty odor that sort of, you know, stale tobacco. And when I realized what it was, I went, you know, oh gosh. That's the smell, I bet, that everybody keeps talking about. Now, the skeptic in me will say, well, the Mount, so much of the interior is wood and plaster, and a lot of that is original wood and plaster. Now, we know that both Edith Wharton and her husband were smokers. We have photos of Edith Wharton smoking. Several of the other owners after them were smokers. And I have reason to believe that some of the young ladies in the boarding school might have sneaked a cigarette.
That's funny because I was thinking that right before
There's definitely a history of smoking there, and wood is a porous structure, you know, and substance.
True.
So it will absorb those odors over time. So is it just that, or is it a residual manifestation of somebody or something that once happened there. Don't know. Really on the fence about it still.
Now, when you did the investigations, I imagine it took quite a while to review all of the videos and the recordings and everything. Because that process has got to be rather tedious.
Yeah, I mean, it's never, especially when you go in, as I said, that I kind of do and we kind of do, never expecting something paranormal or supernatural. That makes evidence review all the more difficult, especially when you don't have an experience when you're investigating. And I think it's important for investigators or would-be new investigators to remember that if you don't have a personal experience while you're investigating, then the likelihood of you actually finding something during your review drops precipitously. Because paranormal experiences don't happen to machines, they happen to people. Mm-hmm. So if there was nobody there who had a paranormal experience, then sort of what are you left with? Yeah, you might get something strange on video, you might get something strange on audio. But if the person who was there didn't notice that or that didn't affect them, then you're looking at, well, was that just an isolated technical malfunction or environmental anomaly of some kind? So you really have to weigh all those.
That's interesting, because a lot of people say, you know, they didn't hear it at all. Nothing happened. And then after they were reviewing, and that's when they heard this. Yeah. And sometimes with the audio recordings in particular, I find that, you know, it's when people post it on YouTube or post the video, and then they'll put what it was that you supposedly are hearing.
I hate subtitled EVPs.
You know, because I'm like, now I'm listening for beware, when it really sounds like it said, wash the dishes or whatever. Or actually what it really sounds like is, I don't know anything. You know, I've got nothing for that. But so to me, that's really difficult as someone who's interested in the paranormal, or the picture of, and you guys have seen these where, and look at the person standing in the window. I'm like, where is the person
circled
in the window?
In red, always circled.
And then
red,
I'm looking at it and I'm like, it looks smudgy.
The pixel? You want me to look at the pixel? What? Yeah.
I think it is a lot of times when you review the evidence and you hear it, as the reviewer, one thing, somebody else can interpret that completely differently. So do you encounter that between the two of you?
You want to take this, Miranda?
I mean, sure. I think definitely everyone hears things differently. I mean, Nick, anytime he will think that he hears something in evidence review, you know, we'll sort of swap with each other. We won't say anything. We don't like to predisposition each other. We like to sort of listen to it raw and see, even giving us more than one option, you know, like, is more beneficial than just trying to condition someone like, oh, well, he's saying my name. Can't you hear him say my name? You know, like, it's... I think that's where we're very good, when you're being skeptical, when you listen to something, because there's so many different interpretations. And there's also lots of different factors. You know, the radio waves are one of the things that is a very, I guess, heavy frequency. A lot of interference can come into play, and there's a lot of different factors that can sort of, you can be picking up any type of, you know, radio signal mm-hmm. around you.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of make it sound, you can make anything sound like what you want it to be, you know, so you have to be very careful psychologically. So we like to sort of, if we think we hear something, we let each other listen to it. Don't tell them, just like, hey, sit, take a listen to this. Do you, you know, tell me if you hear or see anything. So I think that approach is probably neglected a little bit, maybe, in paranormal research, or at least the stuff that they put out there on YouTube, or I guess it's not really research. What we're trying to do and accomplish is real paranormal research, you know, using different environmental meters and really trying to debunk certain material and stuff like that, not just, when you pick up a snippet of something, be like, oh, hey, look, like I caught this. Like, did you? So, yeah, it's just.
I do think you're right there, Miranda. I think a lot of groups are more for the sensational and getting likes and getting views. And so then it does make more sense to say, listen, she says beware. And then you're like, oh my God, she said beware. And yeah. and you get more likes that way. You'll get more views that way. But I don't think it furthers the paranormal investigator trying to do this scientifically.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. No, it definitely doesn't bode well. That's, you know, why there can be certain qualms with television shows are exactly that. They are television shows, they're entertainment. It doesn't mean that they are paranormal investigators going out doing scientific research.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Not that they have agendas. It's just, you know, there's paranormal stuff for entertainment, and then there's paranormal stuff for scientific phenomenon purposes. So I think that maybe with all the horror genres, those two worlds have sort of overshadowed the scientific part of paranormal investigations.
Because really, you know, it's not as exciting as you set everything up and then within 10 minutes, you know, somebody scratched you or there's, you know, you picked up this incredible EVP. It's not always like that. You know, there's a lot of sitting around and waiting.
Oh yeah. Lots of sitting, being patient and just listening and observing, you know.
So Nick, once you got done with the investigations at the Mount and you reviewed all of the evidence, did you really find anything in that review that really kind of supported paranormal activity there?
Well, I think the support of paranormal activity at the Mount, or the idea of it, and I'm not saying the Mount is haunted. It is, to me, like any other allegedly haunted location, an allegedly haunted location. That is until, of course, the ghost walks up to me and says, hi, here I am. It's got, as I said, you know, close to 50 years of reported activity, some of which are by witnesses who did not know about that history of paranormal activity. And when you have locations like that with that long of a history, it clearly means that something is going mm-hmm. on there. What that is, I'm still on the fence about myself. As far as our findings, Miranda shared with you a really interesting experience that happened during our last investigation when she heard what she thought was, you know, one of the cleaning people talking to me. And then, of course, we found they were outside, actually sitting in their car with the engine running. So how we would have been able to hear them anyway, I don't know. Not to mention the fact that they both speak Spanish when they're speaking to each other. And Miranda thought that what she heard was English. So I don't even know who or what that could have been. We haven't gotten anything as far as physical evidence, nothing on video or audio that would support the idea or the presence of a ghost. I think what, if anything, is going on at the Mount is probably more akin to a residual style haunting or some residual imprints of people and events that have taken place there in the past. But to form a really definitive conclusion about what's going on there, I think that we're just going to have to keep going back and continuing our research. I just don't think we have enough data to really say one way or the other at this point. Miranda, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's always a tough thing to try to deem something or a place haunted or not haunted because there's just so much that we don't know.
Right.
Always things that, you know, conflict with each other because just like how it does feel very like residually in the house and at the Mount, there's also
residually. I liked that. Yeah. I'm gonna steal that one.
We'll make our own dictionary. but there was also an interesting experience that someone had. I guess it was during when the school was there and it was one of the girls' rooms. that could have implied that there was some type of awareness, if you will. To sort of set the scene, there was a girl in bed, and when she had woken up, she had seen a desk sort of magically, not magically appear. There was all of a sudden a desk in the middle of the room, someone sitting at the desk. There was also a chair that was in the corner with someone lying down on it. And there was someone else who was standing on a mantle or right next to a mantle with his arm up on it. And she had said that they had sort of looked at each other, and there was a little bit of, I guess, acknowledgement that they were seeing each other. And she pulled her covers up, you know, and when she took the covers back down, there was no one there. So it's hard to, you know, you can't, there's always things that can go on both sides, uh-huh. which is why we try to focus so much on finding some type of way to get some data, you know, and have some, like, is there anything that's going on in the environment that's having a particular effect? Like, is there a time of a year or a time of day, or if there's a thunderstorm and there's lots of, you know, different electricity in the air, you know, the it's just endless.
Out of all of the investigations that you've done, was there one where you really did pick up on something that you either you got it on video or audio or something that you could not explain?
Oh, I know the one.
Oh, tell me the one.
I'm curious to hear this. Yeah, what are you going to say, Miranda?
Corbin Cabin.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, as far as one that, yeah, we could share with the public and talk about, Corbin Cabin in Shenandoah National Park. I hope it's doing well, considering the devastating wildfires they've had there recently. But this was a cabin, a mountaineer's cabin, built in 1911 by George T. Corbin. It's a real log cabin, two rooms on the ground floor and a little sleeping loft, supposedly haunted by Corbin's second wife, Nee, who died there in childbirth. Miranda, do you wanna tell the story? It involves you, sure. So you might as well.
Nick likes to use me as a little bit of a experiment sometimes. So he'll like to put me in attics or uncomfortable places. If there's anywhere where there's a alleged apparition that doesn't like young women or whatever, I get to fulfill that mission for the team. So I was taking liberty in doing the attic up in this little, you know, cabin. And I was, you know, sitting at the back of the room, sort of just taking my camera. There wasn't much to really look at, so I was just panning around back and forth. I had my night vision on. And there was also a camera that was in the opposite corner that was facing me. And I guess I was asking questions. We were doing a little bit of EVP. And at some point when we were doing review, we saw that the camera started zooming in on me, and it kept zooming and zooming and zooming. It zoomed all the way into the wall, and it just sort of froze there. And this was maybe the first like 5 to 10 minutes of the EVP session, and the camera stayed no longer on me. It was zoomed in on that spot for the whole entire EVP session. We didn't even realize it. And then, of course, during evidence review, we saw this happen. And I happened to be, I guess, I don't know how, but panning the right time. So while the camera was zooming in towards me, I had passed looking at the camera. So you can see that there's no one standing behind the camera. There's nothing there. It just literally zooms in by itself.
When you were in there at the time, because I'm fascinated because I'd been running out of there, did you feel anything at the time? Or were you doing your thing?
Yeah, I think it was more sort of doing my thing, not really paying much attention to it. I mean, there's always, you know, we're only human. There's always a little bit of, for me, at least in the beginning, when I'm really getting acquainted with the place, this nervousness and this kind of like on edge. Yeah. But I didn't feel anything beyond that. Not like I didn't feel like I was being watched. or like that there felt like there was someone else in the room. It was just a little bit creepy because I was, you know, up in this random attic. It was right. The first time there. And so I was a little bit on edge. And then once, you know, you sit and you get used to it and you get the feel for everything, it's like, oh, okay. But it didn't feel weird. Like, I didn't run out of the place. I didn't feel like, we always during EVP sessions say, if you are here and you would, you know, have trouble making contact, you can come up and touch one of us. You know, we invite them to do things like that. And I didn't feel anything or see anything. So
that's really incredible that you got that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've sat for, I don't even know, how many hours did we try to recreate this thing on the camera?
Oh, I mean, I did it for probably 2 or 3 days. This was actually, it was on an old Hi-8 camera. So I just, when we found that this had happened, I kept in my just apartment putting the tape in, letting the camera roll a cycle and just seeing if it zoomed in by itself. Because my, you know, my first impression was, you know, this is obviously some kind of technical malfunction. Either there's something wrong with the camera or something at that time had affected the camera and caused this malfunction. But it never did that again, and it never did it prior to that incident. So I mean, we got it documented as good as anybody could want, but you don't see or hear anything strange on the tape.
Boy, but you sure see something strange on the tape.
Well, I guess that's true. Yeah,
should
yeah.
be happening, because I don't know, that would be, I would think there'd be high-fiving going on once you would see that. You know, when you do what you guys do and you spend so much time at various locations and to get something like that.
I mean, it's cool. Don't get me wrong. But we don't see a ghost. We don't hear a ghost. And none of the environmental conditions that we were monitoring and recording at the time registered anything abnormal at the time of that incident. So I can't really say that was caused by something supernatural. All we can still say is it was a really bizarre mechanical malfunction of some kind. So it's the kind of situation, you know, we want to get excited and we are excited, but we're not jumping for joy quite yet.
And you're right. You're the voice of reason here. I'd be the one like, oh my God, did you see this? I'd be posting that one on YouTube.
It is on YouTube. Okay. If you go to our YouTube channel, Paranormal TV, Season 1, Episode 3.
Okay, I'm going to check that out later. We should post that with this.
It is up. Oh, please.
So say that one more time. Season 1, Episode 3?
Season 1, Episode 3, Paranormal TV is the name of the channel.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I just wanted to kind of talk about what it's like to set up an investigation, and especially with the mount. I was so fascinated by that building. And it's interesting to me that you've had experiences there. But when you can't scientifically prove anything, or you don't have that proof that you can look at, you can hear it, you can see it, you know, that I guess those are the experiences I've had in my life. Like, something walking around. Well, I can't find it, but I hear it. So it's just so interesting to me to do what you do and search that hard for answers. And
go ahead, please.
Do you ever get the feeling like you won't get the right answers or get any answers?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, as somebody who is a skeptical investigator, I am always sort of taking a step back and reevaluating my position in the paranormal field. You know, what the heck am I doing here? Look at all of the time and effort and God knows the amount of money, which I will not say during an interview, that I've spent, you know, indulging this hobby, passion, career, obsession, whatever we want to call it. And maybe I won't ever get the answers that I want. You know, nobody ever said the paranormal was an easy field.
Right.
But the sheer number and volume of individuals who continue to have paranormal experiences every day all over the world, regardless of whether the science, the hard science, says that that phenomenon can't exist. Well, people still have those experiences. So it is clearly a collective and important part of the human experience. And I think that that's worth investigating.
And I find that so interesting. I think that to do what you do, you have to be skeptical. Because if you're not, your own feelings are going to cloud everything. Because you're going to read your own emotions into it. Which is why I would make a really bad paranormal investigator. I would be horrible.
I doubt that.
Oh, I know me. I'd be the one running out of the building. I heard something. Oh my God, it's haunted. Because I grew up in a haunted house. So as a kid, nobody explained it to us. It was just happening. And I don't know how to explain that. And I think that's why I do what I do on this end, because I'm kind of also looking for the answers. Oh, how did that happen? Why did that happen? Why was this thing terrorizing children? I don't know. But it happened to me. And so I think I just constantly talking to people and getting different perspectives, I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that that answer that you just gave is exactly the reason why I do this. You're a prime example, a person who had a paranormal experience. Why did you have that experience? What mm-hmm. caused that? You know, those are all questions that I think a lot of people are interested in. And
asking
questions.
I've had so many people ask me, have you gone back and investigated the house? And I'm like, no. But what information would that give me? Might explain who it could have been, but it doesn't explain why it happened.
Sure.
So I think that's interesting. Well, Miranda, thank you so much for your input on this. I really, really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for your interest. It's always nice to talk to fellow paranormal people.
I love to talk to people and listen to a different approach and how you approach something and what evidence you might have gotten out of it.
Yeah. Hopefully there will be some kind of answer one day, but not for nothing. I mean, the fact that so many people, just like you were saying before, you know, like so many people have a similar story to that they grew up, you know, in a house that was, you know, there has to be something more. And I think that that's why there's such a big interest and why I think Nick and I have sort of taken it on as a mission to sort of shine some light back on the scientific part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows if it can even be scientifically explained, but hey, you know, you got to start somewhere.
Well, I'd love to circle back around sometime and have another discussion about, you know, in a year or so about some other places you've gone to. And, you know, so keep in touch. If you ever come across something that you were like, this is fascinating and I want to talk about this, you just let me know.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Of course. That'd be great.
And that wraps up our conversation with Miranda Arthur Smith and Nick Smith Koblitz from Crypto Paranormal Investigations. You can find them on Facebook or click on their website link in the show notes. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.